rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I.
Welcome to Radio Free Kanata, the voice of the Sovereign Republic of Kanata, established under common law and the will of we, the people. I am your host, Kevin Annett, and it's wonderful to be back after almost a year off the air. But we've been busy little beavers working away at undermining a murder system and bringing to light the new common law republic. If you're listening today, you are that republic. You are stepping away from a global corporate tyranny that is engulfing and destroying all of our people. And in the company of many, you are defying and displacing that tyranny. You're part of a new covenant of free men and women who recognize no authority save that established under the natural law and according to their own conscience. Radio Free Kanata is broadcast live every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time in order not only to educate, but to organize for change. We are here to raise our consciousness and our capacity to reclaim our minds and our world. This program features news updates, inspirational messages, reports from frontline activists, but also training workshops for freedom fighters. We're here to unite and arm our people to lead all of us out of slavery. You can write to us at republicofkanata@gmail.com for if you have program ideas or would like to be more involved. Today, we return. This is our first show in almost a year, and with me, of course, is my intrepid colleague, Ryan Gable. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Kevin.
Hey, it's good
like
to have you.
I like to be intrepid.
Yes, yes, it's good. It's great to be back on the air with you again, and I know you have an. I want to let you make that announcement before we forget about a show later this evening.
Yes, you, myself, and Sandra Fecht will be on this evening at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 12 a.m. if you're on the East Coast, on the Secret Teachings radio program for which I am host. You can find information on how to listen and the promotional page about the subject matter tonight with Kevin and Sandra at www.thesecretteachings.info.
Great, Ryan. Thank you. Now, of course, you know, people have been asking, what have you people been doing for the last year? What's been going on? And, of course, we can't summarize that in just one show, but we're going to begin today. We're going to talk a little bit about what's been happening in our movement over the last year. And, of course, any of you folks who follow us at itccs.org know what's been happening to some degree. But there have been some quite incredible developments in the last little while, and we want to talk about some of those today. One thing, and of course, Ryan, we'll do this as a dialogue, just jump in at any point. But one of the first noteworthy things I want to emphasize, it's almost summarized in these three books that we produced this last year since the new year. Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada, which is, you can find it, murderbydecree.com. Unrelenting Between Sodom and Zion, and like Murder by Decree, that's obtainable through Amazon. But just something that came out the other day, a book called Truth Teller's Shield, which is really a manual for whistleblowers. And I was looking through it again today, and it's, again, through CreateSpace, you can order this. It's really a good manual for people on the ground, and it's written in a very spiritual kind of way, too. And I don't like using that word too much because it's bandied around too much, and it to some degree loses its meaning. But really what it tries to do is goes to the root of the matter, appealing to that remnant of humanity who take on the troubles of the world and they need to change the world personally. And the great stresses and challenges we face, that's all addressed in Truth Teller's Shield. So again, we're going to be quoting from that, reading from it, and, you know, over the next few weeks, because it's very edifying for a lot of the folks out there who, if you're listening to this program, you know how alone you can be. You know how it seems like you're up against an enormity of a society that seems to be going down the toilet and the forces of oppression which seem to be overwhelming us. You are not alone. The purpose of this show is not just to educate, but to unite and organize all of us. And we're going to be talking about some of those details in a little bit. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, Ken, I just wanted to comment on the aspect of this information being overwhelming. Sometimes I myself get overwhelmed with all of the research, the writing, the interviews, and the radio show. But I think it's important to take a step back sometimes from information as a whole and recognize that through main and alternative forms of media, you find that there seems to be a divide of people believing that this information is coming out because there's more child abuse, because there's more corruption, I don't think it's because there's more abuse and there's more corruption. I think the primary reason that so many of us are seeing this now is because of the influence of social media, the influence of people readily being available, the internet being available for people to go and look information up. So the more information comes out, it seems that it's becoming more overwhelming and that this corruption, that this crime is expanding. Maybe in some way that's true, but I think a large part of it is just us realizing what's finally been right. happening for hundreds, thousands of years. We're just finally realizing it, and so it seems within our normalized system to be obscene and dark, when in fact it's been happening for generations, yeah. thousands and thousands of years.
Well, you know, to me, by analogy, it's when I first went working in the downtown east side of Vancouver over 30 years ago now, you could see the drug problem, the alcohol problem, the poverty everywhere because it was there for anyone to see. You don't see it in the affluent neighborhoods because it's all hidden, but it's all out there in the street. And so people have the sense that, well, poor people are just all drug addicts. Our problem, in a way, because of social media, is that we see everything. We see all of the problems. And yet the examples of people who are able to fight back and make change are few and far between. So these are the kinds of stories that we're going to be elevating on Radio Free Canada. Not only our own experience of the great victories we've won in Canada and in as obscure a place, as strange a place as Rome, and in fighting back these crimes and bringing them to light. And, you know, it's quite amazing how just the fact of shining a light on something changes everything. It sends out this force through the universe, which causes those whose power we think is undefeatable, causes them to take pause and step back. And that gives us all a breathing space in which to fight on. So I want to really, you know, emphasize that to people. Also, something we're going to be talking about later in the show is a development that I want to flag now, because next week we're going to have a very special show. It's the 15th anniversary of the whole 9/11 debacle. And on September 11th, next week, on our show, we are going to be having two very special guests, Sandra Fecht, who's one of the few counselors in Canada who deals with survivors of ritual abuse, satanic families in that, and Dave Staffen, who's a survivor of that kind of ritual torture within his own family that occurred very near the Mohawk Indian Residential School. And in fact, there's a link between satanic families within Southern Ontario and the Indian Residential School in the Mohawk Territory. We're going to be getting into that. But we're going to be addressing that in part as part of a bigger story having to do with an appeal we are making to the Russian government and Vladimir Putin. And we're going to be reading that appeal as part of a general news broadcast next Sunday. That appeal will basically be asking the Russian government to step forward now and to help us stop these Ninth Circle child sacrificial rituals, which we've heavily documented. And we've also identified where and how they're happening within Canada. It's tied in very much to the disappearances on the West Coast of Canada, and which is one of the reasons the Canadian government is launching yet another bogus self-inquiry into these crimes in order to conceal them, their so-called missing women's inquiry. We're going to be getting into all of that next week, so please tune in and tell everybody about that program. Ryan.
Yeah, Kevin, I want to maybe have you for a moment, because I have my own explanation and definition and perception of what Satanism is. And when you say satanic abuse or satanic ritual abuse, I think a lot of people have this image of a cartoon version of Satan. What do you mean when you say satanic abuse? What does that represent exactly?
Well, there's two aspects to it. The first is capital S Satanism. There is a formal movement that worships Satan, and which employs as part of its whole rationale and practice the ritual sacrifice and murder and all sorts of other things that they do to newborn babies, which are raised within cultic families. There are women who are breeders who raise children for sacrificial purposes. There's a smaller S Satanism, which is kind of a generic term used to describe any kind of organized ritual abuse or torture. For example, within the Indian residential schools, you found a lot of it. Now, whether or not these cults operate as overt satanic groups or not, don't forget that government military programs, mind control programs, often would implant within their victims the belief that they're part of a satanic ritual in order to protect the real perpetrators, the government, the military, and others. The churches employ the same tactic, and the Roman Catholic Church still uses that often within their practices. We know
it's
there's a strong...
It's common.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's common for something called victim shaming too, I believe.
Right.
Where
now
it's
that's
victim's fault.
Yes, and that's actually a legal tactic the church has used to say, like with the term impaired memory syndrome, somebody who's been traumatized really can't remember the details, therefore their testimony in a court of law doesn't have any weight. It's kind of that whole thing. But I do want to kind of emphasize that in all of our research, we found again and again the strong correlation between the Catholic Mass and the Satanic Mass, the notion that the consumption of the literal body and blood of the innocent, whether it be Christ or a baby, literally brings life to the one consuming that flesh and blood. And, you know, we've got a lot of examples that we'll get into. So, it is something important to flag, but of course this is much bigger than just a bunch of weirdos running around in red robes.
Sure thing. It's always difficult to make the distinction sometimes because there's a cultural definition of Satanism. There's a cultural view of abuse. I've seen a normalization of what we might call pedophilia or child abuse in general, where we're grouping together situations where, let's say, two teenagers are dating, they're 16, 17 years old, they've had sex a few times, then the one kid turns 18, he has sex with the girl who's 17, and then he is somehow a child molester or a sex offender, and that's grouped in together with the people that kidnap or abuse babies and children of the upper echelons of society. So they've kind of rolled it all in together nowadays, I've seen. I don't know what you think about
right.
that.
Well,
making it benign.
I don't want to get too focused right now on the issue of Satanism because we will get into that very much next week. I do want to show, though, here's one link. As part of our investigations on the West Coast, one of the things we found is the whole missing women thing is very much tied into big money. For example, the largest private company in British Columbia, it's got over $1.5 billion in revenue. It's called the BC Investment Management Corporation. It consists of a lot of the pension money of civil servants, and it's invested in everything, including a lot of the West Coast logging companies like TimberWest. Well, what's very interesting is BC Investment Management Corporation is also a subsidiary of the Canada-America conglomerate. It's called CAI, and one of the major shareholders in CAI was Michael Dacchino, who was an infamous Satanist. He was involved with the CIA, their Phoenix program in Vietnam. He's in the top military and CIA echelons in America, and he's also a heavy investor in West Coast logging. Now, here, what is the correlation? What we find often happening is the disappearances of Native people occur in areas of heavy investment, foreign investment, logging areas, minerals, hydroelectricity. We know, of course, natives are being terrorized off their land, but there's a whole other darker component to this that we're going to get into. So I just wanted to flag that so people know that this is about big money. It isn't just about arcane cults going back centuries. It's about modern-day monopoly corporations, and that's something we're going to get into in more detail. One thing I wanted to flag too, Ryan, is people have been asking what kind of activities you've been doing across Canada and the world over the last year. And I do want to mention, and like your comments on this too, that we've been very active in setting up actual training programs, teaching people the common law. And you and I actually did a little kind of mini seminar online about what is the common law, how can people set up their own common law courts and use the common law to actually take back power in their communities, to tell these Crown agents, you're part of a convicted criminal conspiracy called the Crown of England and the Vatican, you're to stand down. We have our new sovereignty now, our new common law courts. We're teaching people how to do that. And one of the purposes of this program is to hold online seminars, little workshops where people can learn these skills. And we encourage listeners to bring people together to listen to the program, to talk about what went on during this hour, and then talk about ways in your community that you can carry on this work. So in other words, use this radio program as an organizer, not just an educator. What are your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, anytime anybody is informed and educated about a subject, it allows for a form of self-empowerment. It allows for you to take responsibility for your own life and also help those around you. Once you're informed and you understand what's going on, maybe in relation to these subjects, or maybe it's in relationship to just your own health, you can become empowered and you can begin to help other people and you can see real change. And as opposed to relying on a corporation, on a government, on some head of state or a local government or anything, other than yourself, you can begin to make decisions and make changes based on your own willpower, and that is extremely, extremely important to take that power back instead of allocating it to a system that is concerned not with you, but with profit, greed, or something perhaps far sinister and more darker.
Exactly. And one of the things, you know, just along that line, in Truth Teller Shield, our latest publication, one of the points I made in writing that was really addressing the difficulty people have psychologically in overcoming that deference to authority that we've all been raised in, and how often it takes a shock in our life to free us up in order to say, okay, I can take this next step and learn how to rely on myself and those like me. Now, that's a very important hurdle. And in fact, I find it's one of the biggest ones people have to get over. How do we, you know, overcome that ingrained deference to authority? And one of the ways, you know, I find the simplest ways is you stay close to the people who are being hurt. That certainly worked for me in doing this long battle over 20 years to expose the genocide in Canada. They gave me inspiration. They gave me encouragement to look at my own pain and suffering in a bigger context so that we don't get self-absorbed and self-pitying. And I think that's a very important thing we all need to learn.
Yeah, last night on my show, The Secret Teachings, I had a chance to talk with Jay Parker. Many of you may know who he is. And he knows Sandra Fecht, who will be on this show next week and who will be on my show this evening. And we were talking about the subconscious mind. And if you don't know Jay Parker, Jay supposedly grew up in a Illuminati-type cult-based family. And his mom and dad were directly involved. And we got into a conversation about the conscious mind versus the subconscious and how his mom basically told him as a child that the entire world, the entire planet, almost every single person on this planet that doesn't really think for themselves, and most of us don't until a later age, some children do, but they're corrupted through all sorts of different forms of media, entertainment, and also that's reaffirmed with parents and schooling. And he said that everything is basically under a form of Stockholm Syndrome, which is what I've said before, where we identify mm-hmm. with our captors who provide some form of meaningless entertainment for us, some aspect of food and shelter in some way, even though we have to work and pay for it. But these people are our protectors. We identify with them, and even if we see them as protectors, they're also our enslavers, but we identify with them so much, we rely on them so much, we depend on them so much, we don't have any form of independence. We don't have any ability outside of breaking that paradigm to think for ourselves. I think that that's an important way to maybe describe right. it, so it makes more sense yeah. that most of us suffer from Stockholm Syndrome.
Well, and you know, I find the quite amazing thing is I've seen in practice how that can be broken. And time and again, the places I've seen where people can overcome that, it doesn't happen individually by and large, just kind of sitting in a room somewhere acquiring this. It happens publicly and it happens in groups. You know, one of the best examples I ever saw is when those times when we were occupying churches across Canada during 2006, 2007, that really forced the apology and this first exposure of genocide in Canada. I was with Native people like William Coombs and others who had been so traumatized they couldn't even go near a Catholic church because of the tortures they had faced in the Catholic Indian schools. But there was William in the midst of our occupation of the church, and the reason he was able to walk through that door and overcome his traumatization and fear of priests was because, as he said to me later, he didn't want to let us down. He knew we were all going to go in there. We all faced the police. We faced arrest. He didn't want to let us down and abandon us. He had to face himself with that and overcome it, and he took strength from all of us. And I can tell you that, I mean, after that, the joy and the power that William and those like him felt, it was just a miracle. And those kind of miracles happen when we do it together. And that's what we're emphasizing over and over. We can declare our sovereignty from the system individually all we like. You know, folks like Dean Clifford and that, they go up against the system. Predictably, they get bashed on the head and thrown in jail for doing that. Set an example to try to scare all of us off. The point is, we're not to do it individually. The more you do things as a group, the more power you have, the more confidence you can build among ourselves. So we're talking about how to establish collective sovereignty and collective awareness. Now, of course, that happens individually, but it needs to manifest in that group way. And that's a lot of the focus of what we're doing. And in that regard, I want to just flag a few issues of how the common law is going to be used in the coming period on different issues. One of the programs in September is going to be prepared by some of our members in Central Ontario. And that's on the whole issue of trafficking of children through the Children's Aid Society in Ontario. Now, of course, Children's Aid Society is a private company which the government contracts, and they make $100,000 for every child they nab out of a family and put in a foster home. So it's black marketing in children under the guise of government. We've documented how this happens. We're going to be putting these ideas out and the information out to you, the listeners, and then encouraging people to use it as a way to organize a common law action to stop the CAS from this trafficking. We've already started that work to some degree with various folks in Kitchener and other places in Ontario. That's one of the issues where common law can be brought to bear. Another one is the whole thing of, and this applies to anyone, anywhere, taxation. The issue we keep hearing about in our meetings all over Canada and all over the world is the fraud going on by government and courts over the systems of taxation. Now, if the IRS is anything like the Canada Revenue Agency, it's not even an American company. It's an offshore corporation which is ripping citizens off with absolutely no accountability, even with the power to jail you if you don't pay this offshore company their exorbitant taxes. The money isn't even going into the government coffers. It's going to some offshore account. Who knows who controls that? So these are some of the issues that, you know, people have voiced that they want to see action brought to bear on common law. I'll give you 3 or 4 minutes to respond to that, then we're going to go to our break, Ryan. Go ahead.
Sure, there's a lot of things that I think I could add to it. I wanted to bring up just as an example and paralleling what you've been saying so far this evening. There's a story out of the Associated Press this week, in fact from September 1st, about a Rhode Island boarding school. And at this Rhode Island boarding school, it turns out that from the 1970s, the 1980s, and even into the early 2000s, children, dozens and dozens of children, were abused by the staff. The principal knew about it and did nothing about this. There's an investigation launched, and when I read through the story and the investigation, I found 5 key points that were identical, as if this is the exposing of a policy that is not just within the church, but any time this type of abuse occurs, where the school did not inform the authorities or police that kids were being abused. None of the people there did this, because if they weren't involved, they were worried about ruining the school's reputation, which is one of the claims against Jimmy Savile at the BBC in London. They didn't want to ruin Jimmy Savile's reputation until he died. The other part of the report says that one of the men who was abusing children, they simply put him on leave, just like the priests that are paid and put on leave. The right. Investigation went into talking about victim shaming. It's the fault of the children for being abused, not the actual people that did the abuse. The fourth part, and there's one more after this, is that the claim in the report says that, don't worry, this doesn't happen today. The school's a different place today. Always putting these crimes in the past as if they don't happen today. And the final part, that the victims, Kevin, were paid settlement, which is identical to what the church does in cases of abuse. They basically offer a non-disclosure gag settlement where once you accept it, you can't talk about this anymore.
And right,
so
now that's
a strict parallel. It's an agenda.
Yes,
you see the policy played out.
Well, that's why I wrote Truth Teller Shield, because every corporation, whether it's a church, a government, military, whoever, they have a set game plan, and that's their disadvantage. They can only operate in predictable ways. They have a protocol how to deal with this. We lay out what the protocol is, and we say, here's what our protocol has to be. Here's the way around it. And I want to talk about that more in the second half. We'll get into all of this stuff in the second half of the show. Right now, we're going to go to a midpoint break, and one of my favorite guys, George Carlin, is going to talk to us about his opinion of religion, followed by Ballad of the Carpenter by Phil Oakes. We'll be back after these 2 breaks.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky, who watches everything you do, every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
Was a working man and a hero you will hear, born in the town of Bethlehem at the turning of the year, at the turning of the year. When Jesus was a little lad, streets rang with his name.
Well, amen, as they say. Kind of reminds me of the sermons I used to give in Port Alberni, and you know where that led me. But I'm glad it led me here, actually. I'm very glad. And it's good to be back, as always. You're listening to Radio Free Canada. We're here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and I believe 10 p.m. Greenwich time. And to flag, speaking of Europe, to flag for people, we are starting a little tour over there in October. Some of us. I'm going to be speaking in Prague at a conference on October 7th. I've been nominated to be a co-recipient of the Prague Peace Prize, and there will be a lot of media there, so that will be good. We'll be getting the message out, and there'll be a lot of good people there to help us. And this message is spreading all over the planet, and it's really a message of reclamation, taking back our minds, our lives, our children, our world, everything. And so, along this line, we have to remember what brought us here. And what brought us here was a lot of pain and suffering. And it continues. We can't relinquish it with some naive hope that we're going to somehow bring them around this new world without that. That's unfortunately our situation. We have to face it squarely and honestly. One of the reasons I've been writing these books is to share that experience with people. So we take strength from each other. And as I am taking it today from you and all those who've come before us. Ryan. Let's carry on with what we were saying before. Are you there?
Yes, I am. We were talking about policy, I believe, and how that policy is played out within church and other institutions to cover up these crimes.
Right. Well, you know, it's we were talking about there being a protocol corporations follow, not just whistleblowers, but anybody who is attempting to surface inconvenient truths, if you like, inconvenient evidence. And one of the first things, of course, that we have to deal with is the fact that information is controlled by and large by the other side. And we need to put out our own information very quickly, very thoroughly. One of the points that we make in the Whistleblower's Manual is you have to put out your own narrative, your own story immediately, and keep putting that narrative out. Because if you relinquish the high ground, whether it's the moral high ground or the informational high ground, the other side is going to grab it, and then you're defeated. And we've had many examples of that. A perfect example is how, because of their control of the media, the government and the churches that did these mass murders of innocent children have been able to completely exonerate themselves and make everybody feel that they're good guys. And, you know, what I find amazing, Ryan, is the how effectively they're able to do this as long as people's eyes are glued on the so-called media. As soon as you step back, you realize it isn't true that anybody who's committed these horrendous crimes are already condemned in the minds of the public, and yet none of that is ever reflected in the corporate media. If you believe them, Canada and the churches were really doing a good thing, and they've apologized for it and helped all these poor Indians now. So that shows you what happens if people, and unfortunately the Native people in Canada, are controlled by a false leadership, which has allowed this to happen. They have not put forward the truth of the genocide affecting their own people yet. It's had to be people on the margins who've done that. But if we don't put forward the truth consistently, it's monopolized by the other side.
That's true, and it's always a matter of justification. It could be the Monroe Doctrine or Manifest Destiny, this idea that by eradicating certain groups, this is done in the name of God. And I can tell you that part of that policy I mentioned before the break was this idea that these crimes took place in the past. And whether it's Aboriginals or it is the whole of the entire human population to a large extent, certain groups, minority groups, are targeted for experimentation, be that psychological or maybe it's medical. I recall the Tuskegee experiments back in the 30s on black men, for example, in terms of a minority group being experimented on. But then it is introduced into the general population. So it's important to always recognize that these crimes might seem like they're being perpetrated in the past, when in fact they're still occurring today, and instead of being a target of one particular group, it typically is the targeting of an entire country or an entire culture. What do you think about that? Am I on target there?
Oh, yeah, very much. I mean, you know, it's so much. I remember something a Vietnam vet told me back in the 80s, because one of my first involvements as a youth in the 70s was getting to know a lot of the Vietnam veterans and those who had actually deserted and come to Canada when I lived in Vancouver. And one of them said, the problem isn't recovering from what I went through in Vietnam. The problem is how to relate to the rest of the world now that I know the truth about what we're living under. And that's, I think, the issue for me is not so much the general problem of what we're talking about as the fact that when you awaken to these things, you are suddenly out in the cold. It's like everything you knew has been suddenly become a lie, and everything you're experiencing is now a nightmare. And how do you survive as an exile within your own culture? That's something that I address in the Truth Teller's Manual, but also all of us face this every day of our life. And one of the functions of this program is to bring people together who are on the front line, who are able to say, look, how do I deal with this? It's kind of, we need to be a support group for each other. How do we survive being a truth teller and somebody whose eyes have been opened?
Yeah, that's a very difficult process. You realize that when you do, using a cliche terminology, when you do open your eyes, when you wake up, you become socially dead. You go through a process of almost initiation, death, and then rebirth. And how I always pictured it is we are now on the outside looking in, as if we teleported out of this dimension, this fake entertainment culture, into a completely different world that seems extremely, extremely dystopic. And it is dystopic only when viewed from a point of view of what we perceive to be utopia, only in the sense of not living with any type of responsibility, relying on others, and of course, living in a form of ignorance where we don't really have to do or worry about anything. The real world's not like that outside of the Matrix. And when we recognize the real world's not like that, that doesn't mean we have to live in misery, as you've laid out in the Truth Teller Manual. But it also doesn't mean we have to live in ignorance once we recognize it and choose not to address the problems we have. I think what we have to do is we reach a point of balance between the two. We recognize problems, we take responsibility, we fight back, and at the same time, we can still have fun, we can still relax, we can still hang out with our friends. It doesn't mean that our entire life has to change. Initially, sure, it seems like the world is turned upside down, and it is. But once you move a little bit past that, I think that there's some manner and some way that you can begin to get back to a normal type of life, just not in the original way that it was. You can start to live again as long as you balance out knowing what's wrong and fixing those problems, even if it's in your own life, as opposed to not knowing anything at all and being completely ignorant of it. It's still a lonely pathway, no doubt about it, but I think there's a point of balance that can be reached.
Right. Can you hear me? Because I suddenly went off the air there for a minute. Can you hear me, Ryan?
Yep, I can hear you. I can hear you fine, yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, we had kind of a little technical fluke here. People's experiences are different, but it's amazing the extent to which our experiences are similar, we have to begin to find that common ground. I, you know, one of the things that prompted me personally to rejuvenate Radio Free Canada was the fact that people were getting that in our networks were getting so caught up in the minutia of their own experience, their own pain, their own struggle, that they couldn't see the bigger picture anymore. We have to step back all the time and look at the bigger panorama, both within ourselves, as you're talking about. You know, we are not defined only by our pain and our loss. You know, the higher majesty of who we are as human beings, as men and women, is revealed often only through our struggles and suffering. And we need to step back during that the smoke and fog of battle and say, the very fact that we've lasted this long means that we're more than who we thought we were. And we have to take strength in that and remind ourselves that we cannot be defeated when we stand on our soul and then the things that cannot be destroyed. So, in other words, giving encouragement to each other, saying, step back and look at the bigger panorama here, folks. This is really important psychologically because I tell you, if you don't, you're consumed by this. And I remember there was one of the fellows, actually, he gave me my Anishinaabe or Ojibwe Indian name, Eagle Strong Voice, back in 2006. His name was Louis Daniels, and he was a Ojibwe elder in Winnipeg who unfortunately was one of the seven people of our network who were killed. He died suddenly in hospital, and we believe from foul play. But he had been sharing a lot of really interesting information he had found as a young person about the forces, what was really behind the residential school genocide. But anyway, during one of the sessions, he and a lot of us, we were holding a circle in one of the Aboriginal centers in North Winnipeg. And he finally stood up and he said, you know, we're all talking as if we have to personally bring down the system. We have to personally stop the government and churches. We don't need to because their wrongs will consume them. They had a word in the Ojibwe language. It's imgonjwe. And it means your wrongs will consume you. It means that you may get away with crime because of your own laws, but the very fact that you've done it means one day you'll be consumed by that evil. And you don't have to be involved with evil. It's like Jesus said, turn away from, to forgive means to not say pat your enemy on the head. It's to turn away from them and walk in the different direction because you know they're coming down. You don't have to kill them. They're bringing themselves down. The real question now is how do we pull our people out of the system to get back on their feet again, to recover and to build a new world? And that to me is the focus of what we've got to be about. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think that no matter what we do as individuals, of course, it always goes back to recognizing the problems we face and realizing that we have the power to make that change. And of course, as you mentioned in the first segment, working with others collectively to make that change, making sure we don't get caught up in co-opting of those movements so that they're misdirected. But yes, and that actually makes me think of a question to propose back to you. And if that's the case where these people eventually do have some type of justice against them, then what is the level of extent and passion to which we should fight back against them? Should we simply withdraw and inform and that's it? Or should we continue to fight on metaphorically in taking these systems down if they're going to bring themselves down, if that's what you're saying? I'm just curious from that point of view, sort of playing devil's advocate, what would you say to that?
Well, it's kind of like an analogy from a garden. You've got to dig up the old soil in order to plant the seeds. We have to dig up the old roots. We've got to tear up the old system, frankly. It doesn't mean it has to happen violently. Simplest way to do that, to give you an example, is when we go to churches and educate people about what they're doing, we've got to say to them, and we often say, you put money in that collection plate and you're involved in a crime. And you can be arrested. You can have a citizen arrest performed on you if you contribute to the Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches. That's just the law. That's the moral law and the law of the land. You can have a lot of fun in the process. You can laugh at these people, as we try to do. A ruler hates nothing more than to be laughed at because they can't answer ridicule. They can answer all sorts of facts. They control the informational high ground, if you like, often. They control people's minds, but they do not control our ability to laugh at them, or music, or those other parts of the brain that they don't control as easily. So, I mean, there's lots of ways you can uproot the old system while building the new one. And I would say, though, the classic example is when people all get together and have a, quote, protest, the most militant protest in the world, even if it has a million people in it, is all directed at the system. It's all saying to the rulers, we acknowledge that you're in charge. We just want something from you, please, right? And it's handing over your energy to the system. Forget about protests. Instead of a million people protesting, you need a million people pulling their money out of the system, getting out and withdrawing and making their own citizen arrests. If you had that many people, you'd have a new society overnight. We've got to redirect people's energy out of the system. And that starts in the grassroots in many small ways, like we've started already. But I'm telling you, it's building as we speak. I see it all the time.
I completely agree with you. In fact, I went to a demonstration for vaccines not to make them mandatory here in the state of Idaho. And the people that go to these are very well-intentioned, but again, they're acknowledging that the system has the right to say, you don't have the right to decide what kind of health your child has or what kind of health care your child has or how your child's going to eat or how they're going to be protected. That's our responsibility. And when people protest, just as you said, they're acknowledging that, yes, that is your ability, but we want the right to have that choice too. No. You already have the choice. You don't have to go to them and meander and ask for it. You have the choice. You're the one that has to be empowered. You don't have to go to the system for permission.
The saddest example I ever saw that was back in 1983 when I was a university student. I was studying law in Vancouver, the University of British Columbia. There was a general strike in British Columbia, and all the unions went on strike. At one point, I was part of a protest that had 80,000 people in downtown Vancouver, and the union brass got together. There was a huge movement involving not just trade unions but all sorts of groups in society against the social credit government at the time. And two union leaders got together with the government, made a deal behind the scenes, sold out all of the demands of the movement, and told everybody to go home. And guess what? Everybody went home. 80,000 people packed up their signs and went home because two guys told them to. And it's like, I was thinking, the issue isn't that they were sold out, because that's what bureaucrats of any stripe do. They make deals behind the scenes. The issue isn't that the government or business or whoever was doing this to the people. That's, you know, a lion will act like a lion, okay? The issue for me was, how is it that 80,000 people suddenly handed over their power again because they were told to? And that incident, you know, that experience put me on the whole road. It kind of led me in a more spiritual direction because I realized there's something more at work here than bread and butter issues. How is it that people's minds are so easily controlled? Until we break free of that mental control, we can't talk about social change. Come on, you know.
Well, I think it's a cultural, social, and psychological problem. And I think the human mind has been studied for so long, going back to the 20s, Edward Bernays targeting people based on their emotions rather than what they actually need in terms of advertising and purchasing products. And so instinctually, we live in a world, each and every one of us, based in a fight or flight response. Psychologically, you take a psychology class, you learn about this usually the first day, Psychology 101, fight or flight. When you're faced with that situation that is dangerous, you're faced with fear. So in relation to protesting or pulling your money out of the system and simply refusing to participate, I think people feel threatened. And I've gone through this too. It's not that protesting is wrong, and it's not that demonstrations are wrong, but demonstrating and believing that holding up a sign and saying we want change or we want to go down with the banks or down with the GMOs, that doesn't do anything if after the protest you go and buy fast food for lunch. That doesn't do anything if you go from the protest to your bank and withdraw a couple of dollars. You have to withdraw from the system, not just complain about it.
Right, and if you're going to protest, then occupy. I mean, like, you know, I'm telling you, when we went beyond protest in Vancouver and we occupied Catholic churches, the few dozen of us who did that had more power than 5,000 people in the street outside the church, because we struck, like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, we struck at what the enemy holds dear. We went in there on a Sunday and threatened a collection plate. Next week, you started hearing talks of apology from the federal government. It wasn't an accident.
And it's easier to stand outside with signs. It's easier to complain about it. Not that it's not justified, but it's easier to do that, to actually take a step in the direction of making a real change rather than just talking about it, to change your entire lifestyle, your family, your friends, your children. People, I think, are threatened by that on a conscious or subconscious level.
Oh, sure.
And so instead of fighting, they fly.
Right. Well, this is all good. I think we've got about 6-7 minutes left. Well, actually less, because we've got a final one of my favorite songs, Farewell to the Crown. That's the song we're going to end on. I want to urge everybody to tune again next week on this station, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, for our very important show on the 15th anniversary of 9/11, having to do with the appeal to Vladimir Putin. Did I pronounce that right? Is it Putin or Putin? Anyway, Vladimir over in Russia and other forces in Europe, we are getting on board, hopefully, with this campaign to shut down the Ninth Circle practices, which are rampant across Canada. We're going to have one person next week talk about some examples of them. And we want you to tune in as well to these websites we have, itccs.org, the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org. A lot of our history is right there online. Murderbydecree.com is our response to the cover-up of genocide in Canada, along with Unrelenting Between Sodom and Zion. You can get both books on Amazon.com. And our third book, Truth Teller Shield, a manual for whistleblowers and hellraisers, which you can also get on Amazon and createspace.com. There's a notice about it at itccs.org if you'd like to order that. I will be on speaking tour, of course, throughout the fall, and we'll have more announcements. Ryan, do you have any other things you want to share?
Yep, just a reinforcement and a reminder tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 Central, 10 in the mountains, and 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on my radio program, The Secret Teaching, that airs multiple nights a week. I will be hosting with Kevin and Sandra Fecht. We'll be talking about, as the show is labeled, Ritual Abuse and Dark Forces, which will include some discussion about Kevin and Sandra's upcoming initiatives and their workshops. So that's tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. For links to listen to the program, it's all free. There's multiple ways to do it. Check out thesecretteachings.info. That's www.thesecretteachings.info or facebook.com/thesecretteachings. You'll be able to find a link to listen to the show on multiple platforms.
Thank you, brother. And again, to remind people listening in now, if you want to write to us with program ideas or other questions or wanting to get involved, write to Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata@gmail.com. And listen to the show every week with other people. Form a group around, you know, around that activity and then act on what you've heard. Use the show as an organizer. We will be back next week. Until then, stay strong and stay clear.